Welcome to the SCMS Classical Conversation Podcast, taped live at the Seattle Chamber Music Society's 2020 Winter Festival. I'm Dave Beck. I hope you enjoy these in-depth conversations with festival musicians. You can find more episodes at seattlechambermusic.org and at king.org and most podcasting platforms. Please rate and review us wherever you listen. SCMS violinist Andrew Wan plays concertmaster in one of North America's most admired ensembles, the Montreal Symphony Orchestra. During the SCMS Winter Festival 2020, Andrew revealed that learning to follow the beat pattern of the orchestra's legendary conductor was a humbling experience. You have a deep fondness and respect for the Maurice Ravel trio that you're going to play tomorrow night here at the festival. And how is it that that piece has come to have such special meaning and associations and significance for you?
Yeah, I love that piece. I love playing it. I love listening to it. There are a lot of pieces, I'm sure this makes sense to everybody, that you would love to play yourself, but when other people are playing it, you know, you're kind of checking your watch. This is one of these pieces that always has something to kind of bite into, even when I'm sitting in the audience and rehearsing it this week with two fantastic collaborators, Sayun Thornston-Dottir, who I went to school with, and she is cello prof at University of Washington here, and Cecile Licad, who is this fantastic pianist living in New York, and this is her first summer here. In fact, I'm playing tonight with her the Grieg Third Sonata. It's been just such a joy to revisit this piece and kind of delve into it a little further. This is a beautifully constructed piece, quite unlike anything that was written for this medium before. And, you know, there's letters from Ravel saying, you know, the piano trio format is not serving my needs. I have to create a brand new instrument to kind of highlight what I want to in this piano trio. And it is quite innovative, and it's a gargantuan kind of sprawling work. Each movement is incredibly satisfying, very unusual. The first movement has this kind of lilting, weird, unsteady feel, and it's this ancient dance called the Zornico, where it's eight beats but divided up in a weird way. It's not quite even, you'll hear it. Second movement is this kind of off-kilter dance. It's called Pontum. And what's cool about this is that, you know, the four lines of this stanza, 1, 2, 3, 4, 2 and 4 are serving as 1 and 3 of the next stanza. So it's overlapping. So it's this constant, like, stepping on each other's toes. And it's this weird, intricate tapestry. Added to this is that it's just super fast. And so it feels like, I don't know what it feels. It feels very stressful to play something like this, but it's done in 4 minutes. And then this third movement is kind of, it opens, it's like this giant wedge up this way and then a giant wedge this way. So it starts with this solemn, low piano, ancient sounding. It's like monks, like a single monk's expressing this very simple tune. And then as the movement progresses, it becomes more and more heated and it becomes quite romantic. And it comes back down to this kind of old music sound. And we go into this last movement where it's very Asian influenced. That's why I'm playing it. where it becomes, you know, quite gargantuan, and like the ending is, you know, he pulls out all the stops. It's very, very fun to play. And even if it's not played super well, if it's not the cleanest, people are just always taken by the wealth of colors and textures. Yeah, I'm very excited to play it.
Yeah. Let's get a little taste of it, and we'll talk about connection that you have to the artists that are playing here. This is the Beaux-Arts Trio, and their recording of the Ravel.
Thank you.
one clue of your connection to this piece comes from that very concise and beautifully summarized travel through the piece that you just gave us. But this, you've got a lot of history with this particular piece, and you told me on the phone the other day that it's like, I can't imagine, you know, coming to a performance of this without, you know, some real background and a lot of miles on the piece.
I wouldn't want to come to a festival like this with players like this and play this piece for the first time. Yeah, it's incredibly complex, and you know, that was an amazing recording, and it makes me feel like I should go practice right now.
Your recordings make me feel that way. Well, and what is this? So you played it a lot with an established group that you had at Juilliard. Is that the story?
Yeah, and the other cool connection is, so that was an amazing recording, but I don't know which violinist was playing that particular, do you know what year that?
You know, I don't have that exact detail.
Well, the original founding violinists, French violinist by the name of Daniel Guillet, who ended up teaching at IU, Indiana. This violin that I'm playing on, Michelangelo Bergonzi from 1744, Cremonese fine Italian instrument that's owned by a philanthropist in Montreal. It used to belong to this founding violinist. And it is what I do love about this violin is that it's easy, it's not easy, it's possible to pull out some of the colors that I grew up listening to from this incredible violinist. It's a very textured violin with a lot of grit to it. I love this violin. I've been playing it for 10 years.
Yeah. How did you come to be invited to audition for the Montreal Symphony Orchestra, your concertmaster position? How did that came about?
You know, I was, when I was in school, I had this quite serious piano trio. We have this silliest name. It was Gal Niska, who is the principal cellist of the Israel Philharmonic, Julio Elizalde, who is a fantastic pianist in his own right, and he's on tour with Sarah Chang and Ray Chen all the time, and Andrew Wan. So our last names formed the acronym NEW. So we were called the New Trio, which is infantile. But we were quite serious, and we entered competitions and did quite well, and they are really like my brothers, and I'm still in touch with them. But there was this competition, the Montreal, it's called the OSM, Concours OSM. And one of the prizes is that you get to solo with the orchestra. And 2 weeks prior to entering this, going to Montreal to play this competition, Julio said, "What concerto will you play in the final round?" And I said, "Well, Sibelius." You know, that's what I was working on at the time. And I played it for many times over the years and still do. And I really love that piece. And he said, "Oh, don't play that piece. I don't think you have anything particularly different or special, and everyone plays that piece. Last year you played Elgar, violin concerto, with the Juilliard Orchestra, and you just, you know, even if you don't play it so well, it's just so unusual, and it's going to make a statement." And I was like, okay. And so I changed my, you know, I called up the competition. I said, "Is it too late to change my final piece?" And they thankfully allowed me to, and he was totally right. It made an impression on the judges. And then when I played with the orchestra, you know, the orchestra sat up a little bit straighter because usually they can sight read the Sibelius concerto. No one practices that piece because we play it every 14 months. But the last time we had played, the orchestra had played the Elgar concerto was probably 14 years. And it was just this kind of, that was and still remains to this day the best orchestra that I get to solo with. You know, I get to play with orchestras here and there, and I had never played with an orchestra that was that flexible and that supportive, playing with intensity but never covering me up, and then just covering a stage with like a massive, gigantic sound in the 2Ds that you just, you can't help but be inspired when you play. After that concert, I was actually, a few weeks later, I was sitting guest concertmaster in Vancouver, and I got a phone call from the competition organizer from Montreal, and she said, "You know, are you interested in orchestra?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." So they said the musicians somehow convinced Nagano to give you a week trial. Mm. And I was over the moon. You know, I was having a nice time in Vancouver, but I didn't have that kind of chemistry with them as a guest concertmaster, as I did as a soloist with the Montreal Symphony. And then I went and played a week. It's funny, the week prior to working with Nagano, I showed up a week, or a few days earlier, just to listen to them, just to see what was in store for me. And I sat in one of the boxes and I was watching him conduct and then the orchestra play. And my orchestra is notorious for playing late to the beat. So the conductor will kind of show a downbeat and then the orchestra will articulate that downbeat about a split second afterwards. And that was very stressful for me to watch. Mm-hmm. And then I went downstairs and I asked some of the musicians, like, I'm not seeing what I think I should be hearing. And then the principal viola says, oh, I don't look up. And of course he was joking. And there is a reason why, a very logical reason why an orchestra should play after the beat, because you can't predict when this moment is. We have to see where that bottom is, and then we interpret together chamber music style where that moment is. And, you know, a lot of great orchestras do this, you know. Anyhow, I did Bruckner Fifth Symphony, only the second half. The first half was Angela Hewitt playing some Bach, and second half we played Bruckner, and I'd never played a Bruckner Symphony, but I could play that piece backwards. I was so prepared. And he and I just hit it off. Nagano was couldn't have been more generous and patient with me. I left that week thinking, I'm going to get the job. I'm such an amazing concertmaster. But looking back, I didn't know what the heck I was doing for the first few years, but he couldn't have been more supportive throughout that.
Well, we'll end this, our conversation here with the fruits of that collaboration. This is, you recorded all three Saint-Saëns violin concertos with your colleagues in Montreal and Kent Nagano. This funny thing about Saint-Saëns, because, you know, you hear we'll play the third concerto. You hear that all the time, but the other two you don't. Same thing with his cello concerto, the A minor cello concerto, great piece, always assigned. You hear it. You don't know about the D minor cello concerto, which is a really wonderful piece. So,
Saint-Saëns, I didn't have a particularly strong connection with him, but I do love his music. His music always just feels so easy. You listen to any of his music, and it's just, he's pouring out these very just beautiful, let's talk about hummable, moments that you can just tell this is a person that was incredibly talented. He was a total polymath. He could do anything. He was like traveler, philosopher, poet. Everything he wrote just made a lot of sense. It wasn't my idea to record these concertos, actually. It was Nagano's brilliant idea, and I really do have him to thank for this project. He, about 5 years into our relationship, he said, I would love it if we did some kind of collaboration where you recorded a concerto with the orchestra. He said, why don't you come back with some ideas over the summer? And I couldn't come back with one, because every piece that I liked, I just didn't want to add another bad recording out there. And he just took over the project, and he said, I would like for you to record these three pieces. You know, the third, as you said, was recorded a lot. The other two are not, and no one really has. There have been other examples of this, but generally speaking, people don't go out there and record these three concertos and put them to a disc. And so he convinced me to learn them. I had, of course, played the third a few times with orchestras, but we recorded all three in 1 week, and that was a very tiring affair. I remember my fiance, I don't remember this, but she said that you were just completely catatonic all week. You just could not be reasoned with, and I just really wanted to be sick and just can't call off the whole thing, because they were just like a live performance. It was, but in the end, you know, it turned out okay. I can't listen to this disc.
Okay.
It's very difficult.
Cover your ears, because we're going to listen to it. So here's the third Saint-Saëns concerto with Andrew Juan, Montreal Symphony, Kent Nagano conducting. Well, judging from the look on people's faces, you're about the only person in the room that had any issues with that, Andrew. That was brilliant.
Thank you
so much.
So much.
So keep coming back to Seattle amidst Orford Quartet performances and teaching and work in Montreal and all the traveling I know you're doing. It's been a great pleasure to hear you over the years. We wish you well this weekend, and thank you so much for a great conversation today.
What a pleasure for me. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Classical Conversation Podcast. This podcast is a co-production of Seattle Chamber Music Society and King FM. Bill Levy is our recording engineer. The show is produced by Nikhil Sarma and co-produced by Daisha Clay. To learn more, go to seattlechambermusic.org or to king.org.